from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
The demonstrators who've been demanding an end to racial injustice and excessive police violence have also been calling for the removal of Confederate monuments and other public displays that for many evoke slavery and oppression. Some protesters have gone further, ripping them down themselves. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on In Conversation, we'll jump into the debate over controversial monuments and public art, and we want you to join us. Which figures do you think should be removed, if any? What should be done with them when they're taken down? What should go up in their place? We have a panel of guests who consider those and many other questions as we discuss public monuments, public art, and racism this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, more than 770 Confederate monuments are currently standing across the U.S., and nearly 1,800 Confederate symbols or names are emblazoned on government buildings, schools, and parks, among other infrastructure. People who have been demonstrating against racial injustice in recent weeks across the country say those figures and other images are part of the problem. They're representations of racism and oppression that have no place in a public setting. In some cities, protesters have taken them down themselves. Some have been thrown in the river. Defenders of those displays say they're part of the nation's history, and taking them down would put us in a dangerous place, and we would be in danger of erasing history, good and bad. And sometimes the two sides have been clashing, as they did Wednesday night in Murray, Kentucky, after the county government said it would not, at least any time soon, take down a Confederate monument featuring General Robert E. Lee outside the Callaway County Courthouse. Here's some of that audio.
You can't erase it.
That audio came to us from Liam Niemeyer at our Kentucky Public Radio partner station WKMS in Murray. Here in Louisville, after a court battle with a public arts group, the city recently removed a figure of John Breckinridge Castleman, a prominent figure in Louisville's history who previously served in the Confederate Army. That statue had been vandalized several times over the past several years. Just last month, a statue of Confederate President Jefferson Davis was removed from the Kentucky Capitol Rotunda at the urging of Governor Andy Beshear. So today we will talk about what's happening with such monuments and public art here and across the country with Connor Town O'Neill, who has written a book about this very topic, and it is forthcoming. It's called Down Along with That Devil's Bones, in which he explores the still raging battles over monuments dedicated to one of the most notorious Confederate generals, Nathan Bedford Forrest. Among other things, he works as a producer on the NPR podcast White Lies, which is also a program we run on WFPL. And he joins us today from Auburn, Alabama. Connor, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick. Glad to be with you.
Dr. Ann Bailey is with us. She is a writer, historian, and professor of history at State University of New York at Binghamton. She's also director of the Harriet Tubman Center for the Study of Freedom and Equity. Dr. Bailey, good to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And welcome to Stephanie Wolf. She is WFPL's arts reporter. She's been covering the debate over monuments and public art, including the removal of the Jefferson Davis statue last month from the state capitol. Stephanie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Stephanie joined our team at the start of the coronavirus pandemic back in March, and this is the first time we have met in person, so it's good to have you here with us in the studio. A little later in the program, we'll be joined by Braylon Resco Stewart. He's a Louisville-based artist known professionally as Resco, who, with others, just completed a huge mural featuring Breonna Taylor and others whose deaths at the hands of police have sparked protests across the country. And we will talk to him shortly. Plus, our associate producer, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, has conducted an interview that we'll listen back to with a Louisville playwright as part of her series, A Black Artist Matter. That's coming up a little later in the program. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What do you think about Confederate statues and other monuments that for many stand as symbols, reminders of racism, slavery, white supremacy, and oppression? Should they come down? Are there others that you find offensive? Where should they go if they do come down? What should go up in their place? We'll talk about it. Call us 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet. Our handle is WFPL News, and we're on Facebook. Dr. Bailey, I'd like to start with you. The demand to bring down these monuments and statues and images has intensified, obviously, recently with the protests over the police killings of George Floyd in Minnesota and Breonna Taylor in, here in Louisville, most prominently. And you say that intensity, that zeal is, of course, understandable, but the work of ending the legacy of slavery and racism is still in front of all of us, regardless of what we do with the statues. Talk about that.
Well, first of all, I do want to say my comments are in honor of Breonna Taylor, and I hope and I know that there are many good people in Louisville and around the country and the world who are still seeking justice for her, and I am one of them. So, in effect, that is the hard work that we need to do, is to see how we can address issues of systemic racism, whether it is in education, healthcare, police reform, and what have you. That's the hard work that I think is still to be done. It's the work that's been started by the brave men and women of the civil rights movement in the 50s and the 60s. And really, the baton has been passed on to us in this relay, if you will. And I think that's what a lot of people, particularly young people, are protesting about. The statues and what to do about them, I think that's a part of the larger work. It's not either or, it's both and. Obviously, from my point of view, I think from all our point of view, I would imagine we would want to see the more systemic issues addressed. But I also say to those who are concerned about these symbols that they're right to be concerned about them. They represent yesterday and not today and the future.
Now, many of these monuments have stood for many years, generations, but it seems like it really wasn't until recent years, 5-10 years, that there the public sentiment really started to turn strongly toward bringing them down. What do you think happened during that time, and why now on the bringing down of these monuments and statues?
Well, I think, you know, part of what was happening is, again, it's how the two pieces, what's going on in society and what's going on the ground is reflected in what some of these statues represent. I mean, if you have 1,800 plus either memorial statues or some likeness of Confederate generals and Confederate soldiers across this country, not only in the South, but across this country, and yet at the same time, less than 2% of the sites on the National Register of Places represent anything of African-American interest or history. You see that imbalance, right? You can see the inequity. And I looked at some of this. I had the pleasure of looking at some of this in detail with the New York Times when we did a big article a few months ago on places where people of African descent were sold, auction sites across the country. And there are likely hundreds of thousands of auction sites across the country, because over 1 million people were sold, especially in the period between the 30 years before the Civil War in 1861. And yet most of those sites are unmarked. Most of those sites you could find maybe just an empty street or CVS or a bank, or sometimes you find a Confederate soldier, if you can believe that. So that kind of inequity has to be addressed. It has to be addressed not just on the ground in terms of our policies, but also in the public square.
I want to come back to you, Dr. Bailey, and talk about some of those things. What should be going up, and what are we missing? What should go up in place of some of these other monuments? But Connor Town O'Neill, I want to turn with you and talk about your forthcoming book, Down Along with That Devil's Bones. And for those who don't know it, you focus on Nathan Bedford Forrest, Confederate general. For those who don't know, give us some background on who he was and what you did in the book.
Yeah, so Forrest, before he was Confederate general, made a fortune as a slave trader in Memphis and equipped his own cavalry regiment at the outbreak of the war. And rose from a private to a lieutenant general during the war, During the war, oversaw the massacre of surrendering black soldiers at Fort Pillow, really became a sort of a notorious cavalry leader. After the war, he served as the first Grand Wizard of the Klan and operated a convict leasing farm on President's Island in Memphis, a system that historian Douglas Blackman has termed slavery by another name. So throughout his life, he represents a lot of these touchstones of racial violence and of the systemic inequities that the country was really founded on and has found ways to perpetuate even after the emancipation. So he's this really notorious figure, but he is also defended and beloved by many. The novelist and historian Shelby Foote named him one of the two geniuses to emerge from the war. The novelist Andrew Lytle called him the most man in the world. So he's reviled by some, beloved by others. There are and statues of him across the South. There's a county named after him in Mississippi, a city named after him in Arkansas, a state park named after him in Tennessee. So his symbols are very much still with us, as is his legacy of holding up white supremacy. So he was a really interesting lens to look at both the past, but also the present. And so that's really what the book tries to balance.
So you went through some of these places and talked to folks about Forrest and their thoughts about him.
Yeah. So you had asked earlier about the last couple of years and more attention being paid to symbols of the Confederacy, and that was certainly true for me, as I think it was true for a lot of people, having our being sensitized to the prevalence of these symbols and statues after Dylann Roof murdered 9 parishioners at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. After he was arrested, images from the blog that he kept circulated, and it became clear that before he went to Charleston, he did a sort of sightseeing tour of Confederate monuments and plantations before he headed there. And in the aftermath of the Charleston 9, so many of these symbols sort of came under scrutiny, and protest movements arose trying to take them down. I think in the immediate aftermath, the most striking image was Bree Newsom climbing the state capitol in South Carolina to remove the Confederate flag herself. And so in the aftermath of those protests, as so many of these symbols came under fire, I decided to follow those aimed at Forrest specifically, because of what I've mentioned earlier about what his legacy represents.
We're going to come back and talk to you much more about that, and we're up against a break, and we'll talk more with all of our guests, and bring in Resco, a black artist here in Louisville, whose recent projects include a mural honoring black people who have died at the hands of police. Our associate producer, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, will speak with Chris Eli Black, a Louisville playwright who has written a musical about police brutality. And we're going to talk with WFPL arts reporter Stephanie Wolf. It's all coming up after a break. This is In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Hellett, and we are talking about Confederate statues, controversial monuments and figures, and whether they should come down, what they should be replaced with, where they should go, with our guest writer, Connor Towne O'Neill, whose forthcoming book, Down Along with That Devil's Bones, explores the continuing battle over monuments dedicated to notorious Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Dr. Ann Bailey is with us, history professor at State University of New York at Binghamton and director of the Harriet Tubman Center for the Study of Freedom and Equality. A little later in the show, we're going to be talking to Braylon Resco Stewart, Louisville-based artist who co-created a large mural featuring Breonna Taylor and others who died at the hands of police. And shortly we'll hear Michelle Tyrene Thompson's interview with a local black playwright as part of our Black Artists Matter series. Right now we're going to talk to WFPL arts reporter Stephanie Wolf. Recently here in Kentucky, just last month, The statue of Jefferson Davis, Confederate president, was removed from the Capitol Rotunda. It had been there for many years. Can you kind of walk us through the timeline of what happened and why it happened when it did?
Yeah, I mean, it probably seemed like it happened fast because the commission that oversees the management of these pieces voted, and then, you know, hours later, a crew is in the Capitol Rotunda starting to move it. But actually, this has been like a debate for years. Officials have been calling for its removal for quite a while. And I think with the Davis statue, what's also important to address is the timeline in which it went up. So it was commissioned and put into place in the Capitol building in the mid-1930s. So this is way after the Civil War ended. And the Southern Poverty Law Center has actually noted that a number of these Confederate monuments have gone up during the height of Jim Crow era and during the civil rights movement. So it does come into question, what message are you trying to send by erecting these statues during that time? And, you know, earlier we heard the clip from Murray about these being, you know, if you remove them, it's erasing history. But it kind of muddies the waters then about whether or not these monuments in and of themselves are history. And it's just like, if you're looking through a history book, would one picture represent history? Like, there needs, you know, there's normally a lot more context around this thing. So experts I've talked to, even the committee that oversaw public art and monuments here in Metro Louisville, have determined that monuments in and of themselves are not history, that there's more to it than that.
The Davis statue has been sent to where?
Yes. Yeah, so, and that's another thing to note, too, that in the case of Castleman and Davis, these statues have not been destroyed. They're simply being relocated. So the Davis statue is going to be moved to the Jefferson Davis Historic Park in Fairview, Kentucky.
And it had been in the Capitol Rotunda since 1936, so a long time. And there had been some efforts previously to have it removed and then to placate some of these folks, or try to placate everybody. I think there was a plaque or something that went up at the base of it, right, to talk about its history.
Yeah, and there was a plaque that was amended or removed because it labeled Davis as a statesman, a hero, a patriot. And so that plaque was removed. And a number of these Confederate monuments, things will be added to contextualize it, to talk about making these more educational tools. But I interviewed State Representative Atticus Scott, and, you know, she addressed that issue of these being tools for education. And her argument was that she has not seen that happen, and she certainly hasn't seen them, to borrow some of her language, she certainly hasn't seen them be tools for how to dismantle systemic racism.
We're going to come back to you. We're going to take some of your calls. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. We're going to talk to our other guest as well. But let's hear this conversation with a local playwright as part of the series Black Art Matters. In Conversations, associate producer Michelle Tyreen Johnson interviews local black artists to talk about how local and national protests are inspiring and fueling their work. And first up is her interview with Chris Eli Black, who's written a musical about police brutality and features some of the demo that he has created. Let's hear that.
Fade to black on the lonely girl. Oh, how she steals the show. Now all she wants to know is, when will this end?
So what's your name?
Chris Eli Black.
Okay. And you're from Louisville?
Yes.
How old are you?
21.
And tell me a little bit about your background as an artist.
Well, I mean, I've always wanted to be in the arts. I mean, it was never another kind of option for me. I fell in love with film really early. I fell in love with animation really early. It's never been a moment in my life when I said, oh, I want to be a businessman or I want to go to law school. It's always been wanting to pursue something in art, something in entertainment. And I didn't figure out that writing was specifically what I wanted to do until later on, but I've never wanted to do anything but tell stories and entertain people, because that was what most of my childhood consisted of. It consisted of watching movies and watching cartoons and designing theme parks and just living inside my imagination and spending, you know, countless hours in, you know, those different worlds in my mind. so, you know, my path to being an artist, I guess, started the day I came out the womb. And then it's all been downhill from there, and because I've never wanted to do anything else.
So tell me a little bit more about what you are doing now. You've written a musical?
Yes. So I wrote a musical entitled Liberty Bleeding, which, not funny enough, has to do with a lot of the subject matter that we're facing now and that we faced every single year in history, basically, which is, you know, an unarmed person of color being killed by the police. And, you know, I started writing this show months ago, a year ago. And so it wasn't based on 2020 hindsight. It was based on the multiple occasions of these kind of things happening before. So, yeah, that's one of the projects that I'm working on. It's a full-length musical, typical ballads, standards that you find in any musical, just with kind of an atypical subject matter. You know, this isn't Wicked. It isn't The Lion King, but it's a real story, and it's, you know, it talks about a community having to deal with the loss of someone who was taken unjustly and how different people react differently to those things.
So what inspired this?
I only enjoy telling stories about people. About real people. I've never been able to take myself, you know, to another planet or something. And even living in my imagination as a kid, the stories I wanted to tell had a basis in reality. And so, you know, when I decided, you know, I want to pursue a career in writing for the stage, I knew that I didn't want to write what people expected. And, you know, since I was in middle school, basically, every single year, it's been a different name added onto the list of people who have been taken away.
As someone who's a Louisville native and who's right here in the time and place where protests are still going on daily, in particular for Breonna Taylor, what does that mean for you in terms of your work?
So what I'm hoping in this time that my work can do is show that not only do our stories matter, but that our stories and our voices are valid.
That was a conversation with Chris Eli Black, local playwright who's written a musical about police brutality. As part of our Black Art Matters series, he spoke with In Conversations associate producer Michelle Tyrene Johnson. You can hear the next four installments of Michelle's series Tuesday afternoons at 5:45 Eastern Time on WFPL and WFPL.org. This is In Conversation on WFPL. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I want to welcome all of our listeners from throughout the state and our Kentucky Public Radio partner stations. And give us a call, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255, if you have a comment or a question about Confederate monuments and public art, other controversial monuments, and which have come to the forefront in light of the recent protest over racial injustice and police violence. 502-814-8255. Or you can send us a tweet. I'm trying to say it. WFPL News is our handle, and we're on Facebook as well. I want to reintroduce our guest, WFPL arts reporter Stephanie Wolf. Braylon Resko-Stewart will be joining us. He's a Louisville-based artist. Also, Dr. Ann Bailey, history professor at State University of New York at Binghamton and director of the Harriet Tubman Center for the Study of Freedom and Equality. And Connor Town O'Neill, he has a book coming out called Down Along with That Devil's Bones, explores the continuing battle over monuments dedicated to notorious Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Connor, when is your book coming out?
The book is out on September 29th.
So how did Nathan Bedford Forrest get to be this revered or despised figure throughout the South? What did you find?
Well, as I mentioned, his biography touches on so many of these racial injustices that both before and after the Civil War. He was a slave trader in Memphis, making a fortune, you know, through the physical and spiritual torture of enslaved people. He oversaw a massacre of surrendering black soldiers at Fort Pillow during the war. after the war, he was the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, and you know, so was implicated in the you know, the overthrow of Reconstruction, and then you know, led a convict leasing farm in Memphis, a system regarded as slavery by another name. So in these ways, you know, he represents all of these horrific instances of racial violence and injustice, and yet on the other hand, he's seen as this sort of what could have been figure for neo-Confederates because he fought in the Western part of the war. He wasn't given as prominent a role as someone like Robert E. Lee. So I think some people come to see him as what could have been if Forrest had been given a larger role during the war. The South might have won. So he's this sort of the Monday morning Confederate quarterbacks sort of touchstone for people who sort of refuse to acknowledge that the war is over or what the consequences of the Confederacy's loss
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of the what could have been among people who admire the Confederacy or follow it or think that we should keep its memory alive. PBS recently reran a series they did on Reconstruction. It was hosted by Dr. Henry Louis Gates. Someone said something to the effect that the Confederacy really took off, if you will, when Lee surrendered to Grant. Because that's when the romanticism and the mythology of the Confederacy and the Confederacy in the South really began, and that seems to be what has carried this notion for so many years of Southern heritage while downplaying or dismissing the bad stuff. Because, Dr. Bailey, it seems like most of these monuments did not go up until years after the Civil War, right?
Right. Most of them, as your other guests had mentioned, really went up from anywhere from the 1930s to even the 50s. During well into the civil rights movement. So that was the heart of Jim Crow and segregation. And it's not a stretch to think that, you know, a society that is trying to, you know, keep integration at bay for as long as possible would romanticize a past in which white supremacy was the ideal. Let me just say this, though, that one, I want to say very clearly that I'm not for people tearing down statues by themselves. And it should be noted that many of the statues that have come down, really cities and public officials have been the ones to actually take them down themselves.
Yes.
And I really, I want that to be very clear for your listeners that, yes, there have been protesters who have taken down some statues, but the great majority of them have come down because public officials have decided over the years that in response to the concern of some of the citizens that it's probably best that these statues go in museums, not be broken down, but be put in museums, which is appropriate. So that's the first thing I'd like to say about that. But secondly, I think what this is really about, the romanticism about the statues, is we are, as you say, forgetting the other side of history, which is that the Confederate soldiers and generals fought for states' rights, but they fought for the right of the states to own slaves. And I think we can't get around that. There's no, you know, they said this in their Articles of Secession. This is not, you know, a political statement. This is what they said they did and why they fought for. And if today, in 2020, we agree that slavery was wrong and it's not the best of what America has to offer the world, but in fact, equality is the best of what America has to offer the world and freedom is the best of what America has to offer the world. And we need to just repent of that period. And I think as a nation where many people relate to the Christian heritage, especially in the South, and I know that there are a number of Christians who feel strongly about these statues as well, you know, repentance is a very big part of Christianity. Mm-hmm. It's at the heart of it. In fact, it's said to be the path to true freedom. So there's lots of ways in which people can look at this past and not, you know, see it as something disruptive, but see it as something freeing for all of us to say that part of the past we'd like to leave behind. The America that we would like to strengthen going forward is the America that's located in the document, all men, are created equal. And the America that we see as a beacon of light and freedom for the world, that's not what these statues represent. They could never represent that. By their own admission, these generals spoke to the fact, the Confederacy spoke to the fact that they were not pro-equality. They were not pro-freedom. And we have to just grapple with that, I think, in a larger way. And as I said, I think there are many ways to do that. I think if you have a Christian heritage, you can look at it that way. Even if you don't, you can just look at it from the standpoint of honoring these men as veterans, honoring their service. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But saying that their goals, which was the goal to continue and expand slavery, were wrong. I think we can hold those two things in balance at the same time. And I hope that those who are listening will think about that. Honor those veterans. If they're veterans in your family or in your ancestry, honor their service. But also acknowledge that what they fought for was wrong.
Stephanie Wolfe, you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point, too, that when we talk about these Confederate monuments or monuments about the Civil War, they do skew so heavily towards people who led the Confederacy. And I just wanted to note real quickly one art project that's happening in Louisville, and it's being led by Louisville author and poet Hannah Drake, who was really compelled by the fact when she went to the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, when she went to historic homes, slaves, enslaved people were basically registered in history as unknown, unnamed, a number. Mm-hmm. And so her effort to memorialize these individuals who, in her, you know, as she put it, were erased from history, that, you know, those types of monuments might be going up as some of the others come down.
You're listening to In Conversation on WFPL. We're coming up against the break. We are talking about controversial monuments and public art. Should they come down? If they do come down, where should they go? And we have a panel of guests here with us. Connor Towne O'Neill, who has a forthcoming book coming out about statues dedicated to Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Also, Dr. Ann Bailey from the State University of New York at Binghamton is here. Brendan Resco Stewart will join us after the break. He's a Louisville-based artist, and WFPL arts reporter Stephanie Wolfe is with us. We're going to take your calls, too, when we come back from the break. You're listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett. Today we're having a conversation about controversial monuments in public art, Confederate monuments, and others that have been targeted for bringing down, for removing and moving to other places. And there's talk about what should go up in place of those monuments. How do we honor folks who have been ignored over the years and the centuries? Our guests are with us. We have Stephanie Wolfe, WFPL arts reporter, Dr. Ann Bailey, history professor at State University of New York at Binghamton, Connor Towne O'Neill, whose forthcoming book, Down Along with That Devil's Bones, explores the continuing battle over monuments dedicated to the notorious Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Louisville artist Resco is going to be joining us in just a second, but we have had some folks who have been waiting for on the phones. And so let's go to Adam, first of all, in Brandenburg. Adam, thank you for waiting and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. I live near Brandenburg, Kentucky, and some of your panelists may know that one of the Confederate monuments in Louisville was relocated in 2017 to the waterfront at Brandenburg. And we were opposed to it then. We're still opposed to it now. And it's just a few people in the county council who really pushed it through and brought it here. And to me, the arguments that keep swirling around the editorials, local editorials, Facebook, and whatever, for having monuments in this way is based on our heritage. That phrase, our heritage, keeps coming up. And I think your guest already touched on this a little bit, but our heritage doesn't really, I mean, it includes the atrocities, but it also includes a lot of good things. But with these monuments, the the focus is clearly on these war heroes, but the Confederacy was a political entity that lasted 5 years. So I'm just not sure how that exactly represents our heritage. And of course, when they mean our heritage, folks mean white heritage, mm-hmm. because the original sin of our slavery is based on white supremacy. It's why it was different than a lot of slavery around the world. And it's still going on today, and it's continuing post-Civil War. There was a campaign of intimidation that still goes on. And I don't think you have to look any further than the Jefferson Davis Memorial in Fairview, which was mentioned earlier, too. That thing is a 400-foot monolith, just like the Washington Monument, towering. At least you could probably see it from the adjacent county, which is Russellville, Kentucky, one of the highest concentrations of black and successful farmers in the state. It also has the highest number of lynchings in the state. And it seems to be blatant effort and intimidation. I don't know if anyone can speak to that, but it really outrages me to see that one. And of course, the one that's in our local county. So.
And that one, and thank you for the call, Adam. One in Brandenburg was used to be adjacent to the University of Louisville campus here in Louisville. The city removed it, and officials in Brandenburg decided they wanted to move it there. Dr. Bailey, let me get your opinion on where do you think these image or these statues and these figures, where should they go? You don't think they should be destroyed? Do you? Do you think they should be moved to somewhere else as part of a historical display?
Absolutely. I think the perfect place for them are museums. And that's what seems to be happening in many cases across the country. I do think if it's possible, and we're in a bit of a heated racial climate, but I think wherever possible, this is something I've recommended for years, that there should be that officials try to have some small town hall meetings, if you will, and give people a chance to express their views in a nonviolent, respectful, and civil way. I can't tell somebody, it's not my right to tell somebody this is not your heritage. I can't tell them how they should feel about history or how they should feel about these statues. But I can express my point of view, both as an individual, a person of color, and as a historian. And others in the community can also express their views. And I think it's when we start to have those types of dialogues, the ones that we have not had literally for years, that's when people start to understand one another. I mean, this is what I've tried to do in my work, which is why I can come to the place where I can hear somebody say it's their heritage. And as the caller just said, really help them unpack that. Is your heritage only 5 years, 5 years of the Confederacy? Yeah. You know, why is your heritage not, Thomas Jefferson and all men are created equal? Why don't we hearken more to that? Or even George Washington as our key founder, who actually, his will called for the emancipation of his slaves. By his will, he emancipated his own slaves. How about that as your heritage? How about looking at that, our founding, that our founders who were also flawed, like the Confederate soldiers, but nonetheless, they stood for unity. Nonetheless, they at least were promoting equality. And I think that's really what we want to do. We want to look at our heritage in a much larger context, not pretend that this part did not exist. So that's why it belongs in a museum. And that's why students should be taught about these figures. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think we have to look at it in the overall context. We are the United States of America. These men fought to divide the United States of America. That was their plan. And had they won, we would not be the country we are today. The number one economy of the world, et cetera, et cetera. Beacon of light for and freedom and equality for so many people wanting to come here. We would not be who we are today had they won. We have to face that at the same time we face this history.
Let's bring in Resco. Braylon Resco Stewart is a Louisville-based artist known professionally as Resco, who, with others, just completed this huge mural here in Louisville featuring Breonna Taylor and others whose deaths at the hands of police have sparked protests across the country. Resco, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Let's talk about this mural at first, because you just unveiled it a couple of weeks ago. Talk a little bit about how you came about doing this, how this came together, and why you chose this particular place, how it all came together.
Well, this was a bipartisan effort with my good friend Whitney Holburn. She's a Louisville-based artist, but right now she's living in Denver, Colorado. She's been doing murals lately all over, you know, Miami, L.A. So she wanted to come back home and give a kind of like a present art-wise through to the community for these people. So we came up with the design. A couple of buildings fell through or locations fell through. But all in all, when it really came down to it, we were afforded a building. They volunteered it. There weren't any city restrictions. So other than that, we just needed funding for it. We raised the funding on our own for the first half of it. And then the second half of it, we used a GoFundMe crowdfunding to replenish the rest of the paint and finish it out. But, I mean, it was just something that was needed to be done in Louisville. They needed to be represented correctly and, you know, on a large, massive, beautiful scale. So I think we did it justice with this building.
Talk about, we mentioned Breonna Taylor, who was shot to death by police. So talk about some of the other figures who are on the mural.
Well, we have Sandra Bland. We have David McAtee, who was shot down by the National Guard during the protests, which most of the United States have no idea, you know, what's really going on in Louisville. So there's been over, you know, this is past the 50th day of protest and over 100th, you know, day. It's still nothing's been done. Besides that, we have Elijah McClain, we have Ahmaud Arbery, and we have George Floyd on there also.
I'm interested in your thoughts as a black artist about statues, Confederate statues, and others that many people find offensive. What are your thoughts about taking them down? What do you think should be done with them if they are brought down?
I mean, we should just go with the status quo and honestly go with what's right for the majority of the American citizens. And if the majority of the American citizens feel that it's offensive to see it out in public or it's an outdated history, then let's relocate it to somewhere that the people who want to appreciate it can appreciate it. And the people who, you know, the majority of us who don't want it there can live our lives in peace, you know, and not be constantly reminded of a state of perpetual fear that we were in not only 50 years, 100 years ago, you know. So we need to come together on that.
Dr. Bailey said there are many historical sites that are being ignored involving where slaves were sold and other places. Who are some of the people you would like to see honored with statue or some sort of public art?
I think Assata Shakur would be a good one. You know, she's a very outspoken political activist, and I think that, you know, the way that the American government tried to silence her was somewhat ignored, and now that she's in exile, I think her story needs to come out so we can all get a better grasp on what's going on between the powers that be and the people, you know, who look like me.
Yeah. Let's get back to the phone, take some calls. Thomas is in Paris. Thomas, thanks so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call, Rick. This is a stimulating and emotional conversation that we're having today. What I like to do is I look at Confederate monuments and Civil War flags in a sports mode. In Kentucky, we love our Wildcats and our Cardinals, and when we display their flags and their swag, it's because we wish they had won. When they lose, we always wish they'd won. And I like to look at the Confederate displays as being displays of a team. And people who support that team wanted to keep a group of people in chains. And when you say you support that team, to me, that's saying it would be okay if those people were still in chains. And I think it is paramount to understand that when you stand up and try to defend this these displays, you're defending your team, and your team wanted to support slavery. And that's the way I look at it.
Nicely put.
Yeah, nicely put.
Yeah.
Sorry, you know, I grew up in Germany as a kid, and we were over there as the Berlin Wall was coming down. So in order to see firsthand what a separation of generations will do to people, mm-hmm. you know, to see it mm-hmm. being destroyed and come down, that was like a very impactful moment of my life. That kind of set me up for doing what I do. So it's basically, you know, it's either the world's going to change or the people who inhabit it will force it to change on its own will.
Well said by all. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Thomas. Let's go to Lauren in Louisville. Hello, Lauren. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Rick. Hi, panelists. Thank you very much. Here's the part that I want to say. First, it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity right now, taking down these statues, to put a better context of the Southern Confederacy, and I think Confederate statues all over the country need to come down immediately. And in that place, and I'm glad artists are here, there's all kinds of wonderful, there are all kinds of statues that can be made for all kinds of abolitionists, Ida B. Wells, mm-hmm. W.E.B. Du Bois, all kinds mm-hmm. of wonderful, Harriet Tubman, Dr. Bailey, the name of her department, all kinds of murals, performances, art of all kinds can really start balancing out and giving a wide community a better, truly historic understanding of what slavery did and does still fit in. So there's much that can be done. And one of the ways of doing that is for example, every state having a commission that works with individual communities to figure out what their criteria are for taking down statues, where they should be, how they might be replaced. There's much that can be done, and I worry about the new place in Montgomery. And I have my
now, Lauren, I think you're kind of fading in and out. I thank you for your call, though. Stephanie, let's talk about what's next. What is the recent weeks? What kind of impact has it had on the arts community here in Louisville and the region?
Well, real quickly, I just want to say some of the broader conversations in the public art world about what could replace these monuments that are coming down is a move more towards contemporary and abstract pieces in the sense of, like, don't put actual representations of people on literal pedestals, but let's create work that speaks to an emotion, to a moment. Even the monument that I mentioned earlier, these are going to be limestone benches with cast feet that run it to the Ohio River, which, as many people know, has great significance over enslaved people who were fleeing violence and slavery in the South. So that's like a broader conversation that's happening. There are other mural projects happening here in Louisville as well. And a few of them are led by Ashley Cathy, a local curator and artist. She is working with Louisville Visual Art and the Community Foundation of Louisville to actually create a mentorship program for Black artists who can learn more about murals, the resources, even getting through the red tape, as Resco mentioned earlier, it can be challenging to secure a place to put a mural up. And she has another community-based project that will be more temporary murals, go up for, you know, maybe a month, and that will be much less professional artist, but I think anybody can contribute. So those are some of the efforts that are on my radar. But yeah, that broader movement of let's not put actual people on literal pedestals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Connor,
it can be ambiguous and interpreted however you want, but, you know, symbols of peace can be symbols of peace interpreted anyway, especially your art.
Connor, I know you're in Auburn, Alabama. Is there a conversation going on in your part of the country about moving statues, moving Confederate monuments and replacing them and coming up with other forms of art?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the University of Alabama, they recently removed a few markers to the Confederacy. There's as there has been for several years, a renewed effort to try and change the names of some of the buildings on campus that are named after former Confederates, avowed white supremacists, eugenicists. And so in recent weeks and months, those efforts have sort of caught fire again. And And it's starting to attach to things that Dr. Bailey had mentioned earlier in the conversation. This symbolic work attaching itself to, or trying to attach itself to broader systemic reform. So at Auburn, there's a big conversation right now about trying to address some of the sort of the really toxic racial climate on campus. Having a broader mm-hmm. conversation, really, what it means to be Black at Auburn, where students of color are drastically underrepresented in FATE, and not just students, but staff and professors as well. So yeah, I think some of the symbolic work is triggering and calling our attention to the bigger conversations and bigger sorts of reforms that are sorely needed.
Very quickly, Resco, where can we see your work and what's next for you?
Oh wow, you can get on my Instagram. It's at Resco, R-E-S-K-O _ C as in Charlie, M as in Mary, A as in Albert. Other than that, I have over like 40 murals riding around the city. The Louisville Skate Park, Sweet Peaches, Rec Bar 812 and 502.
Wonderful.
I mean, they're just all over.
I've seen the mural in west of downtown Louisville, and it is amazing. We hope people check out more of your work. So much more I wanted to talk about. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you all so much for joining us, and thanks to our In Conversation production team, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, Russell Wells, Bill Burton. Our theme was composed by Kojin Toshiro, and I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.